Welcome again to another episode of Is This Thing On? I am your host, Dan Charette. Welcome to the podcast. To all of the new listeners out there, thank you very much for joining me tonight. For everyone who's been around with me for a while, thank you very much for sticking around. We've had some technical issues, I guess you could say, in the weeks and months past. And this is primarily due to the fact that I wanted to try out a new technology called TalkShoe, which is an amazing new service that started, I don't know, they've probably been around for less than a year now, but they really came into popular focus recently when some major podcasters decided to use them as their podcast medium. Of primary note is Leo Laporte and Amber McCarthy, who brought their show Net at Night to TalkShoe in an attempt to create a live call-in, you know, talk show type podcast. And, well, Leo always makes it sound so good and so perfect that, you know, I wanted to try the service out too. And I've got to say right up front, I love TalkShoe. I don't have a problem with TalkShoe, but it seems that the technologies that I am using in order to bring my podcast to TalkShoe produce a not-so-clean sounding audio file, and it's just that simple. It's still a lot of fun to use it, the opportunity to talk to people while I'm doing the podcast, chatting with them, and to allow people to listen in live while we're recording has always been a very cool idea. But the issues are that it's really a telephone bridge that they're making recordings possible through. So everyone who wants to be on a TalkShoe podcast calls in to a specific number, you know, and gets on the bridge, like an old party line, you know, and they do the recording for you. And there are softwares out there for me to be able to pipe in audio, like music and sound effects and such. But the practical upshot of all that is unless you've got your volume levels set just right, you get what I had last week, which was this horrible peaking volume issue, because the volume that I was sending over to TalkShoe was above level and didn't know it. And essentially took what was, you know, another interesting but not relevant, but a fun episode of the podcast and made it very difficult to hear. If you listen to the whole thing, thank you very much. I appreciate it. And I intend to discuss a couple of the same things again. And excuse me, my voice is still not with me yet. Tend to discuss a few of the same things again, and I'm going to play the music again because I feel that it is important to be able to hear and appreciate music and not just have it, you know, kind of playing in the background full of static. It's not fair to Ethereal, and it's not fair to you, the listener, who probably wanted to hear the song and might have liked it if you could have heard it a little clearer. So I intend to play Baby Blue again, and time permitting, I am going to play Like Children at the end of the podcast. I'm also going to replay all of the promos, because these are great audiobooks I want to share with all of you. I've been listening to them all. I'm looking forward to T. Morris's podcast, audiobook coming up. And I want to share these promos with you, so I'm going to play them again as well. But really, the primary focus of this episode is the interview with Mark Levine, author of The Fine Print of Self-Publishing. I had an opportunity to interview him a couple weeks back, and I'm hoping to get this pushed out to all of you to enjoy before the year ends, and to help promote his book and promote, you know, his work. So that's going to be in this episode too. Michelle's at work today. It's getting close to Christmas. She's working Christmas Eve, but she does have Christmas Day off, so yay for small favors. So I'm here by myself, freezing. It's, I don't know, in the high 30s right now. I'm recording this Saturday morning. Yes, the day before Christmas Eve. I had to drop her off to work because it was just too cold for her to ride her bike. I mean, understandably. And I'm awake. It's 6:30 in the morning, and I can't sleep now, so I would normally be getting ready to go to work myself, so I'm going to take this as an advantage of quiet time when the kids are still asleep to create a podcast for you all. So, without any further ado, I am going to play Ethereal's amazingly, hauntingly beautiful song right now called Baby Blue. And when we return, I will have the interview with Mark Levine. Right back, folks.
The best at telling lies. She could get anyone on her side, though she was calculating. I was innocent. The false sins I will not repent.
There you are, driving home with a friend. You're coming back from doing a good thing. You volunteered at a soup kitchen. And kablam! Some schmuck runs the red light, plows into your car, and poof, that's it. Fade to black. You're deader than disco. But you're a good person. You know that. So you know that your adventure is just beginning. You've earned the eternal reward. Heaven. But what if your heaven wasn't so heavenly? All sizzle and no steak. A non-corporeal conspiracy of sorts. A never-ending bummer that'd be downright blasphemous if it weren't true. Heaven kinda sucks. Could you stand it? If you couldn't, would you leave? Discover other places? What about other heavens? That's what happened to longtime friends Kate and Daniel. And that's what they're doing. They're traveling to heavens of cultures now. Of yore, of other species, there are loves and secrets. The roads are everlasting. Explore the heavens. Find Mer Lafferty's Heaven at podiobooks.com.
He was raised to hate non-humans, taught how to kill the five alien races with his bare hands. But 19-year-old Quentin Barnes doesn't want to be a soldier. He wants to be a quarterback, the greatest to have ever played the game. And to be the best, he has to play the best. And the best teams are mixed species, with receivers that jump 25 feet into the air, linemen that bench press 1,200 pounds, and linebackers that literally want to eat you. In a league that spans light years, where organized crime runs every franchise, where games are fixed, rival players are assassinated, and football has become so brutal that stats not only track yards and completions, but dismemberments and death. Quentin Barnes must learn to lead a team filled with the same races he's been taught to hate. He better learn fast, because if he doesn't, he'll just wind up another statistic in the column marked Killed on the Field. The Rookie is a free weekly podcast novel by author Scott Sigler, creator of Earthcore, Ancestor, and Infection. Available now at scottsigler.podshow.com.
I am here tonight with Mark Levine, author of The Fine Print of Self-Publishing, The Contracts and Services of 48 Self-Publishing Companies, Analyzed, Ranked, and Exposed. It's a book I have read. I think it's an excellent guide through the fairly overwhelming world of self-publishing contracts, of which I've seen a few myself. Thank you, Mark, for joining me tonight for this interview.
My pleasure.
Thank you. Okay, I want to start off by saying you were an attorney. You are a self-published author. When did you write Fine Print, and what was it that made you realize that this was a book that really needed to be written?
I didn't really realize that it was a book that needed to be written until I already wrote it, actually.
Okay.
But about six, maybe almost 7 years ago now, a fellow author who was also with my first publisher got my name, contacted me, and said, hey, I signed this really bad contract, and I can't get out of it. I know you're a lawyer. Can you take a look at this for me? So at the time, I had not looked at a lot of publishing contracts. But, I mean, I looked at hundreds and hundreds of commercial contracts, and that's really what all these contracts are.
Right.
So I take a look at this contract, and the first thing that comes to my mind is you'd have to be crazy to sign this thing.
Right.
And in this guy's case, it happened that he licensed his copyright to them in the book for the term of the copyright. So the copyright lasts for 70 years after this guy is already dead.
Right.
Now, this guy also happened to be a professor at a very prestigious university out west. And that's really what got me thinking about, boy, this guy doesn't have any idea what he's doing. And then there's got to be thousands of other people who really don't know and are so eager to have somebody validate their writing that they sign anything that's put in front of them.
Right.
And so that's what really gave me the idea to write the book. And I didn't really know the impact that the book would have in this self-publishing community until I started hearing from self-publishing companies.
Right.
Who I just assumed, you know, had no idea who I was. And but it turned out that every self-publishing company has a copy of my book. And the people and the companies who were rated well were, it was really increasing their business. And the ones who that weren't rated very high, it was killing their business.
Right.
And so there were some publishers that said, hey, you know, you weren't fair and you didn't, you know, you didn't do this and you didn't do that and I want you to fly out and see what we do and I'm going to prove to you that when you do another edition, you're going to say something better about us.
A lot of them have actually changed their contracts as a result as well, yes?
That's true. Eight pretty big ones, including iUniverse, made changes to their contract that I said in the second edition of this book, which was turned out to be the paperback edition that you have,
okay.
I sent an email to every publisher that I was going to cover with a list of questions. And after I reviewed everything, I then went back to their contracts and said, hey, if you don't do this, this, and this, I'm not going to be able to say anything good about your company. This is not an acceptable term for a writer, in my mind. And I think they all realized it, so they all made changes to their contracts. You know, since then, I mean, this book has really been... I get emails and phone calls from people all the time. About 50% of them are thanking me for, you know, saving them heartache, and the other 50% say, I wish I would have read this earlier, and I'm stuck with X, Y, Z, and what do I do?
Right. And you did mention this is the second edition of the book. Was the first edition originally, did it come with a PDF version?
No, the first edition was only a PDF.
Okay.
There was no paperback. There was a lot of demand for the paperback, so that was really what facilitated me putting it out in paperback. And I had to read. You know, you have to redo this book every year,
right?
Anyway, so it's worked out very well, and I think the paperback version is probably better for the author who is buying the book,
right?
But for the guy selling the book, it's not as good as selling an ebook because, as you know, a nonfiction reference type ebook can sell for much more than the same book as a paperback with no cost.
Yeah.
I don't know why that is, but that's the way it is.
Right. And it's a fine book and it is very easy to read through, and I think it's very handy to jump through it as a paperback book as well. I really enjoy ebooks. I like the ability to be able to search through them too. And I was just curious if there might be an ebook version of the second edition.
There is an ebook version, actually.
Okay. Okay.
It's just not available on Amazon. The ebook is only available through the website. So people have an option where they can just buy the book. They can buy the book and the ebook and some book marketing tools, certain discounts on our copyright service that we do for writers and artists and musicians. So there's different levels that people can choose. But yeah, there is an ebook version.
Okay, good. Now, the title of the book is perfect because it tells you exactly what you're going to find in this book. But I wanted to make sure that I made it clear that this really does specifically deal with print-on-demand publishers.
It does. It used to be, the first edition dealt with ebook publishers as well.
Okay. That were just solely ebook publishers?
That were just solely ebook publishers.
Okay.
And there were so many publishers that were covered that I had to pare this down to have it in some kind of manageable size for a print book.
Yeah.
And I really think ebook publishing is waiting for some kind of great ebook reader that looks and feels and smells like a book.
Right.
And when
someone
creates one, you know, when that comes out, ebook publishing will be a lot different. But it's not where people are really going to publish. So that's
right,
why
where they're
not
comfortable with it still.
Right.
Yeah. What I thought was interesting, though, about you mentioned in the book that a lot of the publishers, or at least some of the publishers that you mentioned in the book, were kind of concerned that you mentioned that they were print-on-demand publishers. Why do you think that is? Why do you think they want to be called self-publishers instead?
Well, I think that there is some kind of bad connotation with print-on-demand. They think it cheapens what the author is doing, or at least that's their perception.
Okay.
I don't really... What they didn't like being called was POD publishers.
Oh,
because
okay.
POD is associated with some of the shadier characters in this business.
All right.
But as I mentioned in the book, I'm going to call you a POD publisher because, number one, save space, and I'm trying to make this book as affordable as possible, and I'm printing it as a print-on-demand book, so
right.
You're going to be called a POD publisher. And it's not a very big deal. I also think that self-publishing has evolved so much, and it continues to evolve, that this is going to do, and it is doing to the publishing industry, a lot of parallels to what's happening in the music industry.
Mm-hmm.
These large publishing companies, what they can offer a writer starts to become less and less. If a writer knows how to market their book, the only thing they would need a large publishing company for is for some large-scale distribution. And even then, and I talk to writers every day and I point this out, that even if you got into Barnes & Noble, you're going to be one book in a sea of a million books. I mean, they're not going to put you up in the front when people walk in. So authors spend a lot of time with the idea that they have to get into these bookstores and that's how they're going to sell books.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't really agree. I think that's kind of a waste of time.
Okay.
But I guess it's kind of off the subject.
Well, no, but it's a good point. And a lot of authors these days do still see that brick and mortar as the goal. I think as long as you're out there promoting your book and it's something that they can get to easily, that's the key, is making it available to people. Now, not only have you listed most of the prominent POD publishers in the book, you've ranked them into categories, running from outstanding to publishers to avoid. But in the previous edition, you had them actually numerically ranked, is that right?
That's right, and that became a problem. That was why I switched to this format. Because what was happening, and it was unfair to these publishers, that the thing that differentiated a 9.2 from a 9.8 is, and I'm not saying it's totally trivial, but it's maybe the way I like their website better than somebody else's.
Right.
And you know, I mean, it's sort of there's the intangible that comes from me making that judgment, and it wasn't fair to people the companies who were very good. And what was happening was the companies started using my ranking as advertising, and they would say, well, we're the best, and this and that, and then they started threatening to sue each other and go back and forth, and they were copying me on emails, and that's why I decided to, and I think it's more fair, to put them in broader categories.
Yeah. Well, it helps make finding them easier, too.
First of all, anybody who changed their contract automatically got into the outstanding category. Anyone who really realizes and accepts that, hey, we have to do things to make ourselves more author-friendly, mm-hmm. and they were willing to do it,
yeah.
to me that says a lot. So every one of those people, every one of those companies made it in there. And what I tried to do was put, of all the big companies, you know, iUniverse, Six Libris, Trafford, all the real big ones that people know, mm-hmm. iUniverse is the best of that group. I mean, do I think that they're better than some of the other ones in the outstanding group? No, but if you want all those frills and all the bells and whistles, the slick website and all the advertising, you know, all that stuff, they're fine and they're not going to rip you off and they're going to give you an okay product. So I tried to put one big one in there, one Christian publisher in there. So I kind of put the best out of every category in there and the ones that change your contract. And I will say about iUniverse, you know, they have really improved their author friendliness.
And that was one of the things I really liked was your author-friendly ratings for each of the publishers, too. That really helps explain why you ranked them the way you did.
To me, I think that's the best part. I think that's a great part of the book if you're choosing a publisher. And if you go through the part where I kind of break down these contracts, because everybody's contract, the general idea of them are the same. And I think I did a pretty good job of explaining this in ways that you don't have to gone to law school to understand what these things mean.
Exactly.
If you could look at a contract and look at what I wrote and figure out what they're talking about.
Absolutely. Now, while the draw of this book is definitely those ratings that you give a lot of good advice, and you do go into some very good detailed explanations about the key parts of the contracts that can be missed when you're going through the fine print. You also spent a good deal of time listing what you consider the 9 qualities of a good self-publishing company, and that was very, very helpful as well.
I mean, I think that's important, and now on the website, I don't think I had this when the book was finalized, but I have what I've called the Author's Bill of Rights, which anybody can download for free.
Okay.
And that kind of takes those 9 things. It expands on those. When I do this, the new version of the book, of those things that a good self-publishing company has, those 9 things are going to be changed a little bit.
Okay.
Because I've now discovered things that I think are even more important. And I don't recall offhand if I said, as one of the 9 things, is that you have to, if you pay to have a cover done and a layout done, that you have to own that material.
Right.
That's in my Author's Bill of Rights. I don't know if it's in my top 9. I just don't recall offhand. But to me, that says a lot about the kind of company that somebody would work with. If I'm paying for you to do this and I decide to leave you, I should be able to get everything, swap out an ISBN, and take it anywhere else and print that book that I've paid for. So the notion that I might own the cover art, but you own the cover, is, I find to be insulting.
Right.
I mean, that will for sure be in there. I mean, you know, I mention a lot about what the print fees are.
Yeah.
The level that these companies mark up the print fees is outrageous. And that I'm going to actually cover in more detail probably in the next round.
Okay.
Well, you know, what happens with these companies is they tell the author, well, you can buy the book at 40% off the cover price.
Right.
Which sort of implies that that's what it costs to print the book. At least in my mind, that's what that implies.
Okay.
Because they don't tell you that when you're buying it at 40% off the cover price, they've still made 100% profit on the printing or 50% profit on the printing.
Right.
So they don't tell you that. And then on the back end, they're taking a royalty for not doing anything. I understand if someone's going to handle your fulfillment and those type of things, they certainly deserve money for that.
Right.
But to give you a page on their website that then goes to Amazon, of which they get a cut anyway,
right?
They mark up the printing on the front end, they're taking a royalty on the back end, and the only person making the money is the publisher. Because
right.
You paid them to publish, they're making it up front and on the back, and they're saying, well, you get 70% or 75% royalty, but it's 75% of something that they jacked up on both ends.
Right.
So it's not a real number. In the new edition, that will be covered in a lot greater detail.
Okay.
Even though I think I probably covered it in pretty good detail, but I'm going to give some real examples.
Yeah, that was definitely, that stood out, and that was something I remember. Another one of the very important points that I remember, and I don't think it was one of your 9 qualities, but it might have ended up as one of your Bill of Rights, was don't pay a dollar until you can see the contract first.
Oh, absolutely. When I go to a company's website in this industry, mm-hmm. if I cannot download that contract easily, mm-hmm. that contract should be on the front page of that website. Say, hey, look, we haven't got nothing to hide. Take a look at what mm-hmm. we do. If I can't find that, and I can't find what you're going to charge me, and I can't figure out what I'm paying to print a book with you, those are problems to me. I was just on some company's website the other day that was not covered in the book. Dorrance Publishing. They will be covered in the new edition because a lot of people have asked about them. But when you go on their website, you can't get anything unless you give them your name and email address and let them send you packets, and then you're sort of on the mailing list for the rest
oh
of your
boy.
Life. You know, that's not the way it should be. If I'm thinking of spending $1,000 or $1,500 with somebody, mm-hmm. they should be happy to give me their contract. I don't need to be sold on anything until I know what it is that's going to happen when I sign on the dotted line.
Absolutely.
I am the person who's buying the book.
Right.
I am that author. I mean, I have fiction out there. Fine print is probably not a great example because that has really taken off and it has a larger distribution, and it's in the library market. And I mean, it's a good example. If you have a good idea and a good concept, you can certainly sell
right.
the book. But it's probably not what the average writer is going to go through.
True.
So when you're the average writer and you have a World War II novel, it's that person who I feel the most protective
of. Absolutely.
And who I don't like to see ripped off, and I don't like to see suckered into buying junk that is worthless, like bookmarks and posters of your book cover, and I mean that's all junk. It's worthless. And the we're going to send your book out to all these people and market it. I mean, they're just sending it out, and the thing's going to end up in someone's trash can.
Right.
Anytime I hear from one of them and they tell me that I've saved them, or I get the call before they buy the book and they say, I'm thinking of going with somebody who's in my publishers to avoid list, the only thing I say is, you know, buy this book. If you don't think it's the best $15 you spent, just send it back to me. I'll send you the money back. But I promise you, I'll be saving you a lot of heartache.
I think it's definitely a very good investment for any author who's contemplating finding the right self-publisher to go to bat for them, basically. I mean, they're working for you. You're not working for them. So, I mean, I actually had considered, when I was starting looking at contracts, I was considering having a lawyer review some of the contracts to help me understand what was going through them. So I think $15 is definitely worth it for everything you go through, picking apart the contracts and helping to make them very clear. That's my pitch.
Oh, I appreciate that.
Okay, well, why don't you go ahead and tell me a little bit more about the other services that you do offer on your website besides the book. You've got Click and Copyright and a few other services.
Well, we have the copyright service. Actually, since the book came out, and I do not mention this in the book, and I will never mention this in the book, but
okay.
After I wrote this book, I realized all the things that I complain that these companies aren't doing, mm-hmm. they should be doing, that I could be doing. I mean, I know how to...
Okay.
I published my own books. I've been very successful at it. I know how to market these things. I know how to do all these things. And so mm-hmm. what we did... I mean, my company is not... It's just not me at a computer. I mean, there's... You know, we have a staff of 10 people, so it's a pretty growing company. We have 30 websites.
Yes.
But what I did was I created a self-publishing company that does everything that I say these companies should be doing. So, for obvious reasons, I couldn't mention it in the book because...
That's plugging yourself.
Well, not only is it plugging myself, but the honest truth is it's better than what any of these other people are doing, so there'd be no use for the book. we don't charge any... The author pays the exact print cost that we pay. There's no markup in print.
Okay.
And there's no royalty in the back end. None.
They
own all the files. All the things that I say in my Bill of Rights,
yep.
is exactly what my company does. And the way we can afford to do it is I don't have 60 or 70 people on staff, and I don't have to have these outrageous markups. And you know, what we do is we make, for under, I think it's under $900, we do everything custom, in-house, the layout, the original cover design. There's no templates. There's no none of that. We do it exactly the way that we would do it for my own books. So when authors, anybody who reads the fine print and calls me ends up signing up with us because they know that it's everything that I talk about. And my whole idea here, if you're going to publish a book and you want to market the book, in my opinion, there's only one way that works to do this, and that is to treat your book like a little e-commerce company.
Absolutely.
And that is a way to have a lot of success. And we do this. Like, I just spent all day today with one of our fantasy authors putting together his online advertising campaign. So we build websites for authors that are very optimized, just like the fine print one is. So those things will eventually rank high. Mm-hmm. We then put together online advertising campaigns. I have one person whose whole job it is to be on MySpace and the social networking sites. Mm-hmm. Promote people's books and get a buzz going about people's books. And those three things together, an optimized website, an effective online advertising campaign, and generating a buzz with MySpace,
mm-hmm.
those three things combined are a much better way to spend money if you want to promote a book than anything any of these other companies could possibly do. Because it's the only way to get your book in front of the people who might want to read it. That's why I don't concentrate about going into bookstores and all that stuff. The idea of, you know, I'm going to sit here and I'm going to go to a book signing and there'll be a whole line of people. The only way that's going to happen is if you start promoting your book and you generate enough interest that eventually someday something like that can happen.
Right.
And even in my case with my novel, I had a woman about a month ago who found my book on MySpace through the person who works for me doing the promotion, She wrote me and said, I love the book. It's a great book, et cetera, et cetera. And then she said, I'm going to get my whole book club to read it. She happened to be local here in town. So then 10 people ordered the book in one day.
Wow.
Then I went and spoke to the book club. And so when I was at the book club, then they started buying other copies that they wanted to give away for Christmas and the holidays.
That's how you do it.
That's why this thing works. And just like, and I've just started, I finally got the website up for my new novel. I mean, it just finally went up. And so I've been doing that in driving the right kind of traffic to, I didn't even have the order page up, but I wanted to see what, I wanted to see if I could make a dent in the Amazon rankings. So last night was the first night I had ads up for my novel. And last night, I was at about 650,000 on Amazon.
Mm-hmm.
When I woke up today, I was at 30,000. Now, that may not be more than 10 books or 15 books.
Right.
But, you know, that's still a nice chunk of books.
Absolutely.
And so it's something that I'm really excited about. I obviously believe, I mean, I know that it works. And any author, whoever calls me, they can only find us because we only advertise online. I don't advertise in Writer's Digest. The internet is so targeted, I don't believe, even if I advertise the fine print in Writer's Digest, and I get asked all the time why I don't, because I have to rely, or I have to hope that the person reading Writer's Digest sees my ad, happens to be thinking about publishing a book, not publishing a book, then from that ad goes immediately to the internet to order the book.
Right.
If that chain is broken, if they say, this is a great idea, I'm going to rip out this page and come back later, my chance of getting that sale just went down.
Right.
Because they think it's filed in a drawer, they pull it out 2 weeks later, and then they say, ah, you know what, forget it. And now, and look at all, there's all the screenwriters who are reading Writer's Digest. There's all, I mean, there's all sorts of people reading it that have no interest in publishing, that have immediate interest in publishing, where they're going to go out and publish this book. Whereas, and I have to be in that magazine a whole bunch of times to even have any kind of recognition.
Absolutely.
Whereas I can go out and, you know, advertise, so when someone types in Author House, my ad comes up. I know if somebody types in Author House, there's about a 99% chance they're about to, they're thinking about publishing a book.
Right.
And I then, they click on that ad, it takes them right to a page on the fine print website that says, is Author House the right publisher for you? And it goes through a bunch of things, says, okay, now you can buy this book. So that is a much better way to spend money than putting an ad in even a writing magazine, which is extremely targeted. So now when you think about, if you're just an author who's doing a Western or a romance novel, you have to find creative ways to bring the people to you.
Yep.
So this is a very, this is a new venture for our company. We hired somebody to run it who comes from the traditional book publishing world. So we have a lot of the ins to the book distributors and the book buyers, and her closest friend is a small press buyer at Ingram. So it's given our authors a lot of opportunities, and we're able to put together things that make sense. And, you know, of course, the great thing about when you have a good website is every day that thing is online, it keeps aging. And the more a website ages, it's like wine. It becomes better. It goes higher to the top. And even having a MySpace thing set up, when that thing's set up, it's always working for you.
Right.
Maybe you don't get some, maybe every month, if you're not actively out there doing it, you know, people are going to have to fall upon it.
Right.
But when someone falls upon it, it's there. And those are things that always work. So all the bookmarks, and I'm going to go to a book signing that nobody's going to come to except the people I invite who are going to buy the book anyway.
Mm-hmm.
All that effort can be put into something where you can continue to market your book for a longer period of time for less money. So it's something that I'm very excited about, and I kind of wish I could talk about in the fine print, but I couldn't in any way that would make that book objective.
Right.
And I sort of see it as, if someone buys the fine print and they never even learn about my company, they will have saved themselves the heartache of going with a really bad company.
Right.
And any company that I say is good in my book is fine and will provide it. You know, you're going to get a book and they're not going to screw you.
Mm-hmm.
So it's the only way that I can do that and keep doing the fine print.
Wow, that's awesome.
Oh, I should mention one other thing. You know, my company, we just bought Publish.com. I don't know if you know, that's a big free directory where writers can go and put their book covers and blurbs about their book and links to their sales page, and it's all free.
Oh, excellent.
And Publish.com, the guy who used to own it was one of the first affiliates of Click and Copyright, and we've known each other for years, and one thing led to another, and I made him an offer to buy it. And so
very, very nice.
That's a free directory, and anybody can go there, and it's a very high-ranking site, so a link back to your own website is beneficial to the author if they have a website.
Very nice. I would like to learn a little more about your paperback novels that you have published.
My first one I did back in 2000. It came out, and it came out with a company called Bookbooters. They were one of the first people in this industry, and in fact, back then, they used the print-on-demand technology, mm-hmm. but nobody charged. I mean, this company, Bookbooters, actually, they edited my book. They did everything. I think I only had to pay them like a $60 fee or something
right.
to cover some kind of cost. I mean, that was in, you know, these kind of print-on-demand publishing things really had not come to the surface yet. Bookbooters eventually became a print-on-demand company mm-hmm. and then couldn't make it and went out of business. But my first novel was a political thriller, and the highlight of the whole, you know, it's sold decent, you know, I don't know, maybe sold 1,000 copies of it. And now I'm finally getting around to redoing it and building out a website and doing all the things that I talk about.
Mm-hmm.
But Bill Clinton ended up reading the book right when he got out of office.
Nice.
He's a big fan of political thrillers. And he wrote a great handwritten note that will be on the website and is on the wall behind me right now, where he really got into detail of why he liked it and all the bad guys were Republicans, so maybe he was a little biased. It's a very funny note. So that was my first novel, which is...
What is the name of the novel?
I Will Faithfully Execute.
Okay.
Which will be getting a second life here as soon as I found my list of about a million things to do.
Yeah.
But my second novel, Saturn Return, is the one that just was released in July or April or May, one of the... Right, some spring, summer. And it was the first book that our company did.
Okay.
So I was the actual guinea pig of my own company.
Hey, that's
so
the way
I didn't
to do
go
it.
out and seek agents, and I didn't. You know, I know how to sell things online, mm-hmm. so there was no reason for me to go out and do that.
Right.
And the website turned out great. The book turned out great. People really liked it. It's been selling fairly well. I mean, I expected to sell a little better now that I have a website and I am actually doing some advertising for it.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing we were doing was the person working for me was doing marketing my book on MySpace, and that's where all the sales came from initially. Now that will be a little bit different, but that website would certainly be a good example for writers to understand when I talk about an optimized website.
Mm-hmm.
When you go look at any of my websites, every page, every word, everything is there for a specific purpose.
Right.
And you know, we build websites around the terms that people are searching for that coincide with my book. So, like, for instance, this book was the tagline is it's a novel about who you are, where you're going, and who you're meant to be with.
Okay.
So it's kind of a coming-of-age story, and it follows some people in their 30s. There's a lot of dating and relationships. So I have these pages on my site that's why reading Saturn Return is more fun than being on a Match.com date.
But
the whole page is all about Match.com, and I have something different for Yahoo Personals. I have something different for this other site, JDate. I have stuff. I have a page, Fun Martinis to Drink While You're Reading the Book. I have songs to listen to when you've been dumped.
Awesome.
It's a very irreverent site, and it's a lot of fun, and I think it's going to... I needed that to shoot, because we have so many fiction authors who are now starting to come in here. I can't just keep showing them and say, here's the fine print website.
Right.
Fiction people have to see fiction to get the idea of how we do things.
Absolutely.
So that's my second book. I really don't know when there'll be another book coming out of me.
I bet you're very busy right now.
I had that one and the second edition of the fine print come out at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
And that, and then running this company, I felt like I was back in school. Like I would get home and then I'd have to start working on the books again.
Right.
I love them, and I'm glad Saturn Return was, I started writing in 97, so it took a while to get it done.
Mm-hmm.
But I know what the next book is going to be. I just don't know when it's ever going to be written.
Is it another novel?
It's another novel.
Okay.
I mean, nonfiction's a lot easier to write, I think. Especially if, you know, a book like The Fine Print, I mean, you're just doing some research, and if you know how to write and put a thing together and make it so people can understand it, it's not easy, but writing a novel takes, I think, a little bit more... I find it to be a little more difficult. It's more fun, but it's a little more difficult.
Right. When is the next edition of The Fine Print coming out?
I mean, you know, the good thing about us is, I mean, all I would do is write it and upload it, ready to go. There's no, I don't have to wait, you know, I have to just write it, have an editor go through it, and I expect it to be maybe in the spring.
Okay.
I mean, it's kind of a project where I'm going to have to have someone help me, you know, to contact the companies and
right.
compare what I wrote last time compared to what they're offering now. So I'll probably bring someone in for about a month or so and have that done and then write it, and then it'll be out. I mean, just when someone comes to the website, the new version will be out.
And is it going to have more publishers in it, do you think, or just more details?
I think it's going to have, I don't know if it's going to have more, but it's going to have, some of the other ones in here will probably fall out.
Okay.
I'm going to spend some time concentrating on some of these companies like Dorrance and Wheatmark that I consider to be more book printers
okay.
than really self-publishing companies.
All right.
But so many people use those companies and have asked me about them, but those types of companies will probably make it in. I'm also going to have probably a lot, I don't know, I'm not sure how big it is, but I want to really kind of I'm going to spend some time talking about how you can effectively market a book, because I think just signing the contract...
That's just the first step.
People are under the misconception that, hey, I'm going to go with this company. Like, I have the Alexa ratings in there. I will not have that in there again.
Right.
Because it's most, and I think I didn't mention it in here, that most of their traffic is people looking to publish books. So it's not, you know, it's not people buying. Nobody says, hey, I'm going to go see what iUniverse has in its library today because I want to buy a book.
Right.
And it doesn't happen. So authors have to understand that they can't just, you know, you just don't put it up on Amazon and people find you.
Right.
With the exception of a book like The Fine Print, where people are typing in a term like self-publishing.
Right.
And that, you know, see, the book used to only be called The Fine Print.
Okay.
But I changed the title to The Fine Print of Self-Publishing when it became paperback and when it went on Amazon, because Amazon works like a traditional search engine.
Absolutely.
So I wanted that term to be in the main title of the book. So other than, you know, if you're a nonfiction book is a little bit different, especially in a niche area like that on Amazon, because people are actually searching for it. I mean, my Amazon ranking every day is somewhere between 9,000 and 30,000, which is pretty phenomenal.
Absolutely.
For a book from not a major publisher.
Right.
And a lot of that's because people are searching for that type of a book. And when you type in self-publishing, my book's, you know, number 3 or 4 or something that comes up. But if you have just a regular fiction book, you have to do something else. And a lot of people have no idea what to do.
That's true.
You know, and they buy into the, hey, we're going to send this thing out to all these reviewers. And, I mean, that's all.
It's all well and good, but that's not all of it.
It's all well and good, except at the end of the day, you're going to get nothing out of it.
Right. Well, thank you very much, Mark, for joining me tonight. I wish you the best of luck with The Fine Print and your other books and all your projects.
Thanks, Dan.
Good night.
Bye.
One man.
No.
Two men.
Going.
Three men.
Seven men.
Seven men.
Seven clones.
Holy shit, seven clones?
Of one man.
Seven clones of one man.
Who killed the president?
Who killed the president?
Yes, just John Alpha.
The president is John Alpha?
No, seventh.
Seven clones.
Seven clones.
Of one man.
Of one man.
John Alpha.
John Alpha.
The Seventh Son Trilogy.
The Seventh Son Trilogy.
From J.C.
Jesus Christ.
No, the other J.C.
Jonathan Colton.
No, the other J.C.
J.C. Hutchins.
Put it all together.
Seven clones of one man. John Alpha, who killed the president. From J.C. Hutchins, it's The Seventh Son Trilogy. Visit www.jchutchins.net for more information.
All right, that's a wrap.
Thank God.
Look, Hutchins. I'm not taking anything away from your success, so long as you know that you wouldn't be where you are if it weren't for me.
Nah, keep talking, Sigler, and maybe someone will actually buy what you're selling.
Bottom line, Pally, I was podcasting before you even knew the ass end of a microphone.
Really? Mr. Tech-Tart? And who was the pioneer that posted the same podcast twice? Yeah, a real bonus episode if I ever heard one.
Brother, I'll put my junkies up against your betas any day.
Yeah?
Yeah!
Yeah?
Yeah!
Hey, excuse me.
What?
Sorry, I couldn't help but over here. You guys are Scott Sigler and J.C. Hutchins?
Yeah.
Scott Sigler, Earthcore, Ancestor, Daruki, and, what's that other one?
Infection?
Yeah, didn't like that one so much. And you, J.C. Hutchins, with the Seven Son, right? That's the series about the clowns.
Clones. For the love of
God. Oh, yeah, clones. That's right, with all the voices. Yeah.
Dumb.
Well, I just wanted to make sure you guys were who you sound like you were. Yeah, I listen to podcasts.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Good friend of my family podcast.
How proud you must be.
Yeah. He's got a message for you. Happy Valentine's Day. From T. Morris. The world's first podcast novelist is back. Billabub Battings and the Case of the Singing Sword. St. Valentine's Day, 2007. Yeah, Valentine's Day. You, got a problem with that.
So, we're back. I hope you enjoyed those promos as much as I did. I think the world of everyone creating audiobooks these days, and I'm hoping to catch up on a lot of them during my Christmas vacation. I hope you'll all check them out. If you're on any road trips anytime soon, you want something to listen to, and you're thinking about going to the library or buying an audiobook, I highly recommend picking up a audiobook, man. They're free. They go right on your iPod or MP3 player. You can burn them to CDs and listen to them. If you like them, you just make a donation to audiobooks.com. $10 per book. The author gets half of it. You're helping support a great cause, and you're listening to some great stories. So check it out. I highly recommend it. All of them can be found at audiobooks.com. I want to say thank you for keeping me going with the podcasts and producing stuff for you guys throughout this long and crazy year, putting up with our almost pod fading a few times just because life's been busy, as I'm sure we can all appreciate. The podcast is going to stay around. It may be changing formats and providers again. I don't intend to completely give up TalkShoe. I still like the idea. I just may not do the piping in of audio type of thing. We'll see how it all works out. If I can find a different way of getting in music to share with everyone into a TalkShoe podcast, I will do that. Either Is This Thing On is going to continue on in a new incarnation, or there may be a new podcast come along, and this one may still pod fade, but into a new incarnation. And that is because I'm working on another website. Yes, another website. I touched upon it in the last episode, but again, I want to talk more about it this time, called the Procrastinators Guild. The idea was, as I was joking with Michelle, that it would be really great if there was a place that writers like me who procrastinate because with many, many projects in order to avoid doing what it is they really ought to be doing, which is we should be writing, as Merle Lafferty says. The idea is that we keep finding ways of procrastinating and doing other things, and I thought it'd be neat to have a place where writers or anyone could go, artists of any kind, and either not only share ideas and talk about projects that they're working on, but also share some of those projects. In other words, if you're writing short stories or fiction or working on little bits and pieces of things and you want to share them to get community feedback, that's what this could be. But it's also kind of a tips and tricks kind of place too. So a writer's community, an artist's community, not that this is anything new, but I wanted it to be something that not only could you do all of that in a forum/blog type setting where every member is going to have the opportunity to have their own blog, etc. I wanted it to be a possible format for podcasts in the future where you know, again, given permission with people posting to Procrastinators Guild, we could create audio content based off of any fiction, short stories, poetry, lyrics, etc., that people might submit, and music too. If anyone has any music that they want to submit to the Procrastinators Guild, if there's any musicians out there, we'd be happy to take it, play it, share it with everyone. So there's probably going to be a Procrastinators Guild podcast, and it may be, you know, it may work in parallel with Is This Thing On, but I can't do both forever is what I'm saying. So either Is This Thing On is going to turn into the Procrastinators Guild podcast, or, excuse me, the Procrastinators Guild podcast will just take over. It'll just become it. The other thing is we want to make a magazine format, print magazine, and even an e-zine format out of article submissions and, you know, writing submissions to the guild. So that may come around as well. It'll be probably quarterly at best to start with so that we can get a lot of good submissions in. But who knows? It may turn into another zine that people might be interested in. So, that's it. My voice is going again. I'm still slightly sick, so thank you for bearing with me. And I'm going to play out with another great song by Ethereal called Play Like Children. Thank you very much, everyone. Take care. Happy holidays. Be good, for goodness sakes. Good night.
Conviction.
that wraps up another episode of Is This Thing On? Thanks for listening, everybody. This blog and podcast are copyright 2006 by Dan Schreck under the Creative Commons Attribution with No Derivatives License. Some rights reserved. If you want to join us on the podcast, send a message to me on Skype at Is This Thing On Podcast. That's one word, Is This Thing On Podcast. If you have any comments about this podcast, feel free to drop a note at shret.net/podmail. Or if you'd rather leave us some voicemail, you can call us at 206-350-7638. That's 206-350-7638. 350-SNET.